Today, I'm going to share with you some results from the human-assisted speaker recognition in NIST SRE 10. But first, I want to point out that this was possible only through the efforts and hard work of a lot of different people. And so credit should go to Jack Godfrey and George Doddington, as well as Joe Campbell, our friends at the LDC, and then my colleague Alvin Martin as well. So there's a question, how can human experts effectively utilize automatic speaker recognition technology? So this was the perspective that we are coming from trying to answer this question when considering HAZR for SRE 10. It's important to note that this was a pilot test, and also important to note that it was not, while we hope it is informative and of interest to the forensic community, it was not designed to be a forensic test. We did not use forensic data. We leveraged data that we were already using for the SRE 10 evaluation. So the HAZR task was given two different speech segments, determine whether they are both spoken by the same speaker. HAZR was a subset of the SRE core test. There were 15 trials in HAZR 1 and 150 trials in HAZR 2. HAZR implies human listening to assist in decision making, and the system descriptions described how much human listening exactly was involved. Participation was open to all who might be interested, as is the tradition in the NIST evaluations, and participants ranged from experts to naive listeners. So when considering how much data humans are able to process in a fixed length of time, we determined that it would be necessary to try and select particularly difficult data in order to make the experiment challenging enough to be interesting. And so the first question that came up was, are we even able to select difficult data? So we ran a preliminary experiment, and this also allowed us to test the protocol for the proposed HAZR study. So what we did was we identified computable speaker pairs from the SRE 08 follow-up. We use an automatic system, set of automatic systems from the follow-up, and through some voting system, selected 47 pairs with multiple system errors. We listened to all the interviews for each speaker in each pair, or at least portions of them, and selected 10 pairs that seemed most difficult to distinguish. From those, we selected 8 non-target trials, and then from those same speakers, we also chose target trials. Something actually I'll note now, that there's a little bit of challenge in terminology. So when we say target trials or model or test segment, what we really mean in the case of target trials is same speaker, non-target trials is a different speaker, and then for the model, you might call this the known or the suspect maybe, and in the case of the test, maybe the question. Let's see. So the subject levelier was used in both train and test for all of the HAZR preliminary experiment trials. This involved 14 human evaluators. The volunteers were people involved in the project, either working for the government or as a data provider. And people were permitted unrestricted listening to both train and test. The evaluators provided a actual decision and optionally a confidence score. So here are the results from the preliminary experiment. You can see the overall miss rate was around 18%, and the overall false alarm rate was around 36%. You see that on the left. On the right, you see the number of errors per trial. And we can see from this some trials were very challenging. For example, 15, 5, and 8 had 9, 9, and 8 errors respectively out of 14 people. Three trials had more errors than correct decisions. An additional three had more than one-third errors. And one target and one non-target trial had no errors at all. This plot shows the number of errors by evaluator. The solid red are the false alarms, and the outline are misses. We see all evaluators had false alarm errors, and half had a total error rate of one-third or more. So the trials did prove to be quite challenging, and so this preliminary experiment supported the idea that it would be possible to have a meaningful hazard evaluation with as few as 15 trials. When initially discussing the potential for running a hazard experiment, several potential participants were reluctant to do more than 15 trials, but due to the concern for limited statistical significance, we decided to have a 15 trial and 150 trial hazard test. Although note, there's still limited significance in the 150 trial experiment as well. So let's talk about the hazard evaluation itself. Trials consisted of training and test speech segments. As I said, you may have different terminology for these things. Trials were to be processed separately and independently. So what we did to help accommodate this was create an automated email system where participants would submit their results for a given trial and then would receive an automated response, hopefully shortly after submitting their trial, with a link to the data for the next trial. An unlimited amount, time permitting, of listening was allowed. Human listeners could, and in fact were, in some cases either one person or a panel, and a decision and a likelihood score were required for each trial. Decisions could be made either from a combination of automatic processing and human expertise, or made solely based on human listening. And we did not define a cost function for this evaluation, and so the scoring consisted solely of counting misses and false alarms. As I said earlier, we sought difficult trials due to the limited number of trials, and we did so from the Mixer 6 corpus, which was to be used in SRE 10. The training data was from interviews and included various room mics, and the test data was from phone calls, including some high and low vocal effort phone calls. To select the non-target speaker pairs, we ran a speaker recognition system over a full matrix of possible interview, train and interview test segments. I'd like to take an opportunity now to thank Howard Laodixie for helping us set up a speaker recognition system for this purpose. After running the system over the full matrix, we identified speaker pairs that had a large number of very high scores, and thus selected 37 speaker pairs. And from those, we listened to interview and phone call trials and selected nine based on perception that seemed to be very similar. For the target trials, we ran a full matrix of interview, train, telephone test, and selected the actual trials that way, 30 with the lowest score, and likewise by perception selected six, judged to be most dissimilar. For Hazard 2, the first 15 trials were the same as for Hazard 1. For the remaining 135, we changed some thresholds to allow for additional speaker pairs or trials, but otherwise selected the data randomly from those that were chosen. We did listen for anomalous segments, ones missing speech or something like this, and remove those if any were found. So let's play a game. We call it same speaker, different speaker. So here we're going to play two segments, and we'll try to determine whether it's the same speaker or a different speaker? This may require some expanding appreciation.
A little bit. Not like serious programming.
Right.
Programming, like mathematics and that stuff. Just to run a bunch of things. But it's something super
intense. Mm-hmm.
I'm sure people who actually got my program will But, you know, I got you.
Yeah. What area?
I'm in my...
Okay.
I should note there the male voice is the speaker of interest. This is probably
quite good. I wouldn't mind going to like culinary school also, so
yeah.
Maybe I would pursue that.
Yeah. What kind of cooking do you do?
Anything. I mean, I enjoy I just like to, you know, read and cook books and stuff and
Okay, so how many people thought same speaker? Not a lot. How many people thought different speaker? Some. Okay. Maybe not quite half and half. I'm sorry? Oh, well. Therein lies the rub. Okay. And then for trial two. Oh, well, these are actually different from the experiments. So, careful.
Yeah, I think it is about mid-semester. Normally, in law school, the way that it works is you just have one exam at the end of the semester, so you only have one grade, which is just the one test at the end of the semester, but I'm in my third year, so I'm taking a lot of practical classes, so they require like all this other sort of work, like presentations of papers and things like that, but all of the first and second year classes. Oh, cool.
But they pick a movie, and it could be, it's always kind of random, but it's fun.
Okay.
When is that?
Same speaker. Yes. Different speaker. Again, maybe half and half. So, the first one was the same, and the second was different. So, 20 systems from 15 brave souls willing to participate completed the 15 trials for Hazard 1, and 8 systems from 6 sites completed the additional 135 trials in Hazard 2. Most sites that participated in Hazard also participated in the main SRE 10 eval. And the sites represented academic and government organizations from 6 different countries. So for Hazard 1, here's the story. Blue are target trials, and red are non-target trials, and the darker colors represent errors. So at the bottom, you can see sort of number of errors per trial, and then in the columns, you can see misses and false alarms for each site. Okay. This is corresponding information for Hazard 2, just the information from the columns at the end. Misses in blue, false alarms in red. So, one question we were interested in was whether the human listening was worthwhile in selecting trials for the Hazard experiment. So our first look at this was that the Hazard 1 trials with the 20 systems had about 38% miss rate and 47% false alarm rate, which wasn't too different from the 8 systems on 135 trials. So we thought, this is probably not worth the human effort, which was quite a bit to select the Hazard 1 trials. We can select it in the same manner as Hazard 2. We recently, maybe in the last day or so, broke this out into the same 8 systems. And here we see the miss rate stays about the same, but the false alarm rate is actually significantly higher. So it seems as though maybe the Hazard 1 trials were a little more difficult, but hopefully the Hazard 2 trials were difficult enough. This is another view of the Hazard 1, Hazard 2 comparison. The blue dots are Hazard 1, the red circles are for Hazard 2, and the lines connecting them show that it's the same system. And in all cases, with the exception of, I'm not sure I have a mouse, here we are. With the exception of this one, the system here, in all cases, Hazard 2 was less challenging than Hazard 1. No, this is a real, obviously. So they probably wouldn't. sure. So with Hazard 1 and Hazard 2, we had some interest in how humans did, but also how systems did on these systems. We were actually a little concerned that we were biasing this against systems since we used a system to select difficult trials. What we see here, each red dot represents a site's performance on Hazard 1. Something to note, someone brought up in the last presentation, that the dots on the axes actually shouldn't be on the axes. They're 0%, but would otherwise be not be visible. So we put them there just so they could be seen. So as I said, the red dots represent the hazard sites. The lines represent top systems from the SRE10 evaluation. And the thing that's notable here is that in all cases the dots are on or outside this dotted yellow line. We did something similar with Hazard 2, and here we have on the same plot automatic systems and Hazard 2 systems. The thick lines are automatic systems, and the thin lines are Hazard 2 systems, and we note a fair amount of separation between the two groups, though these are the top SRE automatic systems. In this slide, we see systems that, or sites that participated both in Hazard 2 and in the SRE10 eval. And corresponding colors represent the same site. Once again, thick lines are automatic systems and thin lines are hazard systems. And the thing to note here is within each color, the thick lines are always closer to the origin than the thin lines. So to summarize, the effort to select challenging data for Hazard was successful, we feel. We were very pleased that we were able to do that. Hazard 2 trials were only somewhat less challenging than Hazard 1. We can probably revise this and say they were more challenging than Hazard 1, though once again perhaps Hazard 2 was challenging enough for our purpose at this time. Performance of hazard systems did not compare favorably with that of automatic systems on the hazard trials, although I feel obliged to remind everyone, as David notes, that there are so few trials that it's difficult to find any significance in the statistical significance in the results. And then there's a question, if hazard evaluation is deemed valuable, how should this pilot be extended? Should the test protocol be changed, or was it reasonable? Is there a good way to alter the trial selection, or was it also likewise reasonable? And what we keep on bumping up against is statistical significance. So is there a way to be able to get additional statistical significance without burdening the sites too much? And that is all. Thank you.
Thanks, Greg. We have time for some questions or comments.
Thank you, Craig.
Sure.
Can you
briefly explain what the protocols were, how these trials were actually done? What did people actually do to arrive at their decisions?
Sure. So what I can say is that it varied from site to site, and each site sent a system description that was available to all the hazard participants. In many cases, they were naive listeners, as we had stated earlier. In some cases, they are maybe more familiar with the process and have some process beyond naive listening that they go through. Does that address your question, hopefully? Thanks.
Other question?
Create a dead plot for the hazard systems when they only gave binary decisions?
I'm sorry?
How did you produce a dead plot if they were just giving you binary decisions?
Sure. So each hazard participant was required, in addition to giving a decision, to give a confidence score.
Oh, so I thought that was optional, but they all
no,
did.
No, that was, I'm sorry, yes. No, that was in the preliminary experiment.
Okay.
It was optional on that, and the hazard evaluation, it was obliged.
Craig, the experiment was clearly oriented toward making it virtually impossible for the automatic systems to get the right answer. So there was sort of a bias in this experiment, an a priori bias, I should say, towards giving the humans a large role. Now, it didn't turn out that way, as it turned out, because, but that was the way it seemed to me that it was set up to favor the human input.
Well, this was our concern. I'll note in the case of the Hazard 1 trials, human perception was also involved to select those.
Oh, right.
So maybe it wasn't as big a problem there.
I really liked, my suggestion to do this in the future would be to try to incorporate some of the kinds of things that Lara did in her paper to use non-speaker ID metrics to pre-select hard trials, because there's something self-fulfilling about using a speaker ID system to pick speaker ID trials.
Sure.
So and something as simple as average values of F1, F2, and F3, something trivial like that turned out to be very valuable.
Thank you.
You said that one of the reasons of doing this is to see if the combination of human and machine would help.
Yep.
So I have a suggestion for a different setup of hazard, and that is that you say for people that have a system, they can do the normal NIST eval, and then if they want to do hazard, they have 150 trials that they can listen to, so they can decide which ones they think would be helpful to listen to based on their system output.
Yeah.
And then they can listen to it, whatever, readjust their decision, readjust the score. Of course, then you wouldn't have the same trials for every system, but you haven't really combined decisions. You've compared, you've summed conditions, but you haven't really combined so far.
Yes, I think that would be interesting. The thing I'll note, however, is that some sites did their own, you know, human-machine fusion. So I guess we are able to get some very small glimpse at that. But I like your suggestion. It sounds interesting.
I agree also with this idea because, as we say during the discussion, during the workshop, we move a lot from the idea to see a human helping a system or adding knowledge to a system. And we are trying now to answer two questions, try to evaluate the abilities of human people, human experts, and try to help a system at the same time. And your selection process is maybe not perfect in the idea if we try to see if we are able to help a system. It's good to evaluate human, but not for the other part. The last one? No, it's okay. We have the last one.
So I just wanted to add that, of course, our interest has the tables flipped. We were more interested in seeing if machines can help humans in this task. In line with that, we're going to be establishing an additional mechanism for communicating about future evaluations along this line. Alvin and Craig have both asked for input on what might help in future evaluation and to help motivate discussions and whatnot, just as there was just formed a Google group for SRE continuation. We'll do a parallel thing for HAZR. Already I've received over a dozen suggestions for how to make this an interesting evaluation in the future. And I've heard many very interesting suggestions, including multilingual efforts and related activities like the BKA's new corpus for doing work like this as well. So I just wanted to add that comment. Feel free to contact me or the NIST people about that.
Briefly, did you investigate fusion between the human-based and the automatic systems and to see whether the human part adds some further information that the automatic system didn't tap on?
Sure. Yes, we've not really looked at this, though. Find it very interesting. Part of the challenge is that in some cases the human and machine results were fused prior to coming to us, so it would be difficult in those cases to tease out what part of that was the human perception.
Okay, thank you, Craig.
Thank you very much.